Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, no matter where you're listening, around the world, this is Sedona Talk Radio.
This is Kalia, and today is Tuesday, June 17th, 2004, and we're bringing you Supercharge Your Inner Chi series. The series is Soul Recovery Today. That is our topic, Soul Recovery, Soul Retrieval. A big part of the work I do is soul retrieval, because the nature of my work is to help those who have been in relationship with narcissists get back what has been taken. Narcissistic abuse often feels like a soul rape. It's a deep feeling of having been violated on a very deep level. Many people have brought deep feelings of having been violated from childhood, from having a narcissistic parent, or having been physically, emotionally, or sexually abused. Our soul is the part of us that is eternal, the part of us that occupies our body when we're born and leaves when we die. But when our soul flees, while we're still alive, we can feel like a shell of a person because, well, we are. What happens when our soul flees? Is our soul really stolen or lost? If so, how do we get it back? And I'm going to explore these questions in this episode on soul recovery. If you've ever seen a soul leave the body at the moment of death, you will see a noticeable difference, even if that person has been unconscious prior to passing away. The life force in that body leaves, and all that is left behind is an empty shell. The soul is that life force, and sometimes that life force is strong, and other times it is weak. When our life force is weak, the soul occupying our body is not fully present in our body. This means we are not fully present. So, does our soul really flee? I see it more like a feeling that God has abandoned us. Has God really abandoned us? The truth is more that we have abandoned God. We've turned our back on God. We've separated ourselves from our own soul. Our soul is an aspect of God. It is the part of us that is eternal. When we feel empty, dry, lifeless, and numb, we've often ignored the inner call in favor of an empty promise, or to avoid pain. Our soul doesn't leave us, we leave it. We shut off from it, we close the door on it. When we're in any kind of abusive relationship, we give our power away in that relationship. Our soul is where our power lies. So when we give our power away, we give our soul away. We become powerless and soulless. You've likely heard the phrase, sold your soul to the devil. What does that really mean? Well, in the case of soul loss, it means that you've made a pact that goes against your personal truth. You've bargained for something that requires you to give up who you are. In the case of an abusive relationship, you're bargaining for love, approval, attention, to avoid being abandoned, to avoid being hurt, judged, ignored, devalued, or any other number of things. The problem with making these kinds of pacts is that we don't usually get what we've bargained for. You may ignore your higher truth in favor of approval seeking from a significant person in your life only to be disapproved of anyway. But you still ignore your truth, and the more you ignore your truth, the more you separate from your true self, the part of you that is in oneness with God or with the divine, the part of you that is soul. When we ignore who we really are on a deep soul level long enough, we become mere shells of ourselves. We separate from ourselves. We fail to listen to our inner knowing, and we fail to walk the path of truth. Instead, we give others the power to define for us what is true. And when we do this, we allow ourselves to be misled. The reason narcissistic abuse is so dangerous on a soul level is that the narcissist doesn't really see you, but rather sees others as an extension of self. Therefore, you need to behave as he or she feels you should in order to gain acceptance, love, and approval. When you follow your own truth, you are punished, ignored, invalidated, and/or discarded, which is painful for those who give others the power to define them. It's too easy to associate invalidation, punishment, and being ignored or cast aside as a sign that we are somehow unworthy, which is deeply painful. Our core shame is triggered. In order to avoid the pain of the shame, we give in, or rather give up, our own beliefs and values in favor of being accepted or approved of. When we do this, we condemn our own soul to the dungeon and align with somebody else's truth, even if it doesn't ring true for us. When you understand how you lose your soul, it's much easier to understand how to get it back. Soul recovery is more than just a ritual ceremony where we call back those pieces of ourselves that have been lost, stolen, or given away. It is a process of recovery that involves learning how to be true to oneself. Our society teaches us to follow the leader. We're asked to listen to our teachers, our parents, our government, and do what we are told. So it isn't surprising that we assign the significant people in our lives the power to make important decisions for us or tell us what to do or how to do it. When we're taught to mistrust ourselves from the beginning, from a very early age, we learn to invalidate ourselves. This sets us up to give our power away. When we give our power away, we're operating from the belief that you know better for me than I do for myself. We've learned not to trust ourselves and instead put our faith in others, even those who are completely untrustworthy. When we learn to trust ourselves and follow the call of our own soul, we're led in the direction that is right for us. We learn to dance to the beat of our own drum and stop trying to do the dance steps others want us to do in order to have power over us. Calling back our soul is a process that involves a decision to begin being true to ourselves. But how can we be true to ourselves when we have no clue who ourselves are? In order to be true to yourself, you have to find yourself. You have to know yourself. You have to learn to listen. What does it mean to listen? There's something we call the still, small voice within. It is a guiding light within us. And when we learn to tune into this voice and follow its promptings, we are guided to where we need to be. But learning to listen is a process. First of all, how do you tell the difference between the voice of intuition and the voice of logic and reasoning? the voice of logic and reasoning, according to Matt Kahn, who is a great speaker on personal and spiritual growth and love, he says that when you hear the voice of logic and reasoning, it sounds like a sales pitch. And I really like that definition. I think we can all relate to that definition. When we hear all the reasons why we should do it in this way or do this or follow that road, we are listening to the voice of logic and reasoning. Logic and reasoning has excuses and reasons why. The voice of intuition is more of a feeling, an inner prompting. That gut feeling is intuitively guided. Sometimes we can't be aware of what we are perceiving, sensing, feeling, or thinking until we quiet our minds enough to really tune inward. This is why there's such a focus on going within to find the answers. The answers really are within. They aren't out there. They don't lie in the minds of someone wiser. Wiser beings can only guide you to your own inner wisdom. They cannot tell you what to do. Only your inner wise one can do that. The world is filled with well-meaning advice. I myself am I'm an advisor of sorts. I give people suggestions to help guide them on their path. But ultimately, my words must ring true for the listener. It's possible that some words will ring true and others will not. The best counselors, advisors, coaches, and spiritual leaders don't tell you what to do. They help you to tap into your own inner wisdom and find your own answers. Listening to the voice of intuition is the answer. It is the path back to self. What you are seeking after can only be found within. So, be still and listen. Listen not so much to the voices in your head that tell you why you should do something, that give you reasons, but rather listen to the feelings, to the inner promptings, to the few choice words that might say, go this direction, or turn here, or get out. When you hear things like, you want to major in business because it would give you a good foundation to run your own business someday, that is the voice of reason and logic. That voice has its place, but is more rooted in the masculine patriarchal energy of logic and reasoning. Our world is really top-heavy on logic and reasoning and extremely lacking in intuitive knowing, the feminine energies. Because we're in a period of extreme transformation on the planet, people are being presented with the opportunity to listen and follow their feeling natures, to reconnect with their emotional nature and connect more with the soul self. Where there is greater light, there is also greater darkness. Where more people are turning to their feminine natures, there are more people showing up in their faces to present a strong masculine voice of logic and reasoning. Because the narcissist lives in his head, is a head without a body, is disconnected from his or her feeling nature, he will often be attracted to someone who is being guided to connect more deeply with his or her feeling self. This is the soul test, the initiation that helps us to experience what it is like to ignore our own inner knowing in favor of someone else's logic. When we live in our heads, we're disconnected from our body and soul. We're disconnected from our emotional nature. We learn that feelings are weak and the ability to control and repress our feelings is a sign of strength, when it's actually quite the opposite. Our true strength comes from our emotional nature. It is our feelings that guide us to where our true path lies. When we follow logic and reasoning as our only guidance system, we become mere robots following a program that has been installed in mass consciousness. When we embark upon the path of the soul, listen to the still, small voice within, and engage our emotional nature, we're truly guided in life, and we play our part in the awakening of humanity. Humanity awakens when we're connected to our God nature and live from the heart. Our heart is our feeling center. To be guided by our feelings is to be guided by the heart. It is a misguidance when we hear a voice that tells us, but I feel in my heart I want to be with him, even though my head tells me this relationship is not good for me. What is really happening in a case like this, and I bring this up because I hear it all the time, what's really happening is that you are feeling a deep emotional connection, which is bringing you in touch with your deepest pain, and you believe that being with this person will alleviate your pain, so you're drawn back again and again, only to find that your pain is not alleviated, but rather intensified. That person was the catalyst that has opened Pandora's box. Your feeling nature. And you're resisting the feelings, wanting to crawl back into that hole of non-feeling in order to avoid pain. Although it is said that one can awaken without pain, awakening often comes with great pain because we have to break through the illusions that keep us stuck in robot mode, doing what we think we should rather than what we feel truly guided to do. Most of us who get involved in narcissistic relationships ignore our intuitive natures in order to stay sleeping in the illusion. And when we get booted out of that illusion, it comes with a great deal of suffering. We must use that suffering as a catalyst to propel us forward into greater awareness. We become aware of how we've been mistreating ourselves by allowing ourselves to be mistreated. Our draw back into the arms of the abuser is our great need and desire to have someone out there affirm our worth and value so we don't have to do the inner work and find ourselves worthy of greater love and kindness. It is through such a realization that we learn to treat ourselves with love, compassion, respect, kindness. And when we find ourselves worthy of such love, we will attract those who are loving towards us and will no longer tolerate mistreatment. The more of us who refuse to tolerate mistreatment, the less food there is for those who gain power through the mistreatment of others. But we can't really be mistreated unless we are running an unconscious program of self-judgment whereby we mistreat ourselves. When we're unconsciously mistreating ourselves, we are drawing to us through the law of attraction people who mirror to us how we feel about ourselves on some level. And I'm talking about people we get involved in relationship with. I'm not talking about random accidents or hostage situations or anything like that. I'm talking about people we choose, perhaps unconsciously, to get into a relationship with, or even to remain in relationship with, like family and friends that are abusive. So this can be a hard pill to swallow, but it has been proven over and over again. The more we deem ourselves worthy and really feel our own worthiness, the more the judgments of others roll off us like water off a duck's back. We no longer take it personally, so it no longer carries a charge. We only feel a charge when we internalize it, when we take it personally. So if you're feeling a charge by what someone is saying or doing to you, there's something for you to heal within yourself. Even when you become aware of what it is you need to heal, there may still be pain in the healing. There may still be a charge because it's simply showing you your unhealed stuff. I've become quite aware that those people in my life who are thorns in my side are getting to me for a reason. I'm taking their behavior personally. And my antidote is to disengage, hold a space of love for myself, and know that my divine nature is love. People who are ashamed of themselves like to shame other people. And if we carry deep core shame, we take it on pretty easily. We have to heal our core shame by developing the awareness that our divine nature is love. Shame tells us we are wrong, bad, and unlovable. Shame tells us we are unworthy. But the recognition that our divine nature is love tells us we were born worthy and nothing can change that. The key here is to realize that we are all divine beings of love. But our painful circumstances in life cause us to behave badly. Some behave much worse than others. But we've all been guilty of acting and reacting from our internalized pain. And this is where self-forgiveness comes in. We have to develop understanding and awareness that we act unloving because of our unhealed wounds. The more we practice self-love, the more we act from love. But we must also understand that acting from love involves loving ourselves first and foremost. This means we act lovingly towards ourselves and extend that self-love to those we come in contact with. Now we are truly connecting with our divine nature, our soul selves. Now we are discovering that our highest path is and has always been love. But we've simply misunderstood what that meant. We may have come to believe that love was painful and difficult, and we had to pay a high price to have love in our life. We pay a high price when we try and extract love from a dry well, because we deny ourselves love by focusing our energy in the wrong place. We deny ourselves love when we hang out around that dry well waiting for it to produce water. We deny ourselves love when we develop the false belief that because that well is not producing water, we deserve to thirst. We're often too blind to see that all we really need to do is find a well with water in it. And truly, that well is within us. We command our own internal well to produce water. We command our heart to love. We love our own heart. We become instruments of love. You've heard the biblical saying, Lord, make me an instrument of thy love. Thy love is the love within our own heart, our own being, our own soul. To be connected to our soul is to seek out the love as it speaks to us from within, and then let that love be our guide. To recover the soul is to recover the heart, vice versa. There's no separation between the two. They are one. I said in my last episode on love that when we cut ourselves off from love for fear that we'll be hurt if we open our heart, we cut ourselves off from our soul and the ability to recognize our soul's path. We think of our soul as being the depth within us, that part of us that goes on forever. We often get involved in relationships with deeply wounded people because we can relate to their pain on an unconscious level. We know that pain. We understand it because it is our pain. We understand what it is like to feel unwanted, disconnected, and misunderstood. We find a deep connection with the other because they reflect to us our own depth. It's often not the other we are seeing, but ourselves. We develop a strong compassion for the self as we see it reflected by the other. We often don't understand when we discover a loved one to be a narcissist, incapable of any kind of genuine love or compassion, when we initially felt such a deep connection. We don't understand that we drew to us a mirror of our own heart, complete with a deep level of love, but also our deep pain. So in the beginning, our love is mirrored back to us, and in the end, our deepest pain is mirrored back to us. We often come to believe that he or she holds our love. He or she initially shows us depth and beauty. He or she holds up a mirror that says, look at us. And in the end, he or she holds up a mirror that says, look how wounded you are. It is your wounds that prevent you from realizing how glorious you are. You have to walk through the pain of your wounds to discover your glory. It is the wounds that prevent us from experiencing the loving heart. We keep giving ourselves away and giving ourselves away, hoping to get the other to validate our worth and value, to show us appreciation and kindness. We wait and we wait at that dry well. We lay up for our whole condition, sweater, see, but truly it is our own responsibility. Failing to notice that the well had run dry long ago. It may have always been dry. The water we once believed was there may very well have been a mirage. We often need validation that the other is wrong or bad before we feel justified in leaving. So we wait around long enough to witness the most extreme forms of abuse so we can say, he did this to me, or she did this to me. Isn't that horrible? We may have seen the signs all along the way that we were dying in that relationship. We weren't being fed. We were dehydrated, hungry, and thirsty. But we developed a false belief that the other would never let us starve to death. They wouldn't do that to us. He or she loves us far too much to let us starve or thirst. And when we starve to death, we bring our stories from the grave of how horrible that person is to have let us die like that. But we let ourselves die because we lost touch with ourselves long ago. We disconnected from that part of us that guides us forward to the water. Our true nature would never let us starve or thirst. But we live our lives so deeply disconnected from this nature. When you're willing to face the truth of who you are, you will be led back to yourself. Back to your soul. You are a divine being. You're not some horrible, despicable creature who doesn't deserve the good things in life. How did you ever come to believe this about yourself? Are you ready to let that idea go and claim your true nature? You are a divine being. Love is your divine nature. Your inner well will produce all the water you will ever need. You never have to go thirsty again. Seek within, and you shall find what it is you've been searching for all along. Seek ye first the kingdom of heaven, and all else will be given to you. That's exactly what that means. The kingdom of heaven is within. So let's talk for a moment on the shamanic process called soul retrieval. You will see this service offered by many spiritual healers and shamans, and it's often done energetically without any physical contact at all. You might schedule a soul retrieval, and that person says, okay, I'll be doing it Saturday at 10. And you're not even aware of anything being done. Sometimes you see a shaman one-on-one and lie on a healing table while the shaman works over you with rattles and drums and smoke and all kinds of interesting things. This is initially how I was trained in the process. And in my training, I met with my shamanic animal and guides. And the animal, my lion, my animal was a lion, a big male lion named Agrabah. And he leads the way into the spirit realm to find those parts of your soul that you've been separated from through abuse, illness, death in a previous life, and so on. During this process, we often use drums and rattles to guide us in the process and also guide you into a trance state through deep breathing. When we find a soul piece out there in the astral realm, we bring it back and integrate it into your energy field. But I don't do this anymore. I don't do soul retrieval like this anymore. I found a simple hypnotherapy process to be every bit as effective and less strange for the subject, who may not be ready for all the bells and whistles, rattles and drums. I find that soul retrieval is really a process of intention. Our soul energy is ours at birth and ours by divine right. Other people can take our energy, and we lose energy through relationships with others, through depression, illness, and so on. Also, losing energy can create depression and illness, and so it can be somewhat of a catch-22. Which comes first, the chicken or the egg? Intention is a process of commanding the energy. And most of us have no clue how powerful we are. We can set a conscious intention, and our subconscious goes to work to bring that intention into being. So soul retrieval can be as simple as commanding the energy by saying, I command that all soul pieces and power that you have taken from me in this lifetime or any other be returned to me now with love and kindness. When working to get your power back from a particular individual, I will have my client state his or her name, the name of the person you're getting the power back from. So say his name is Mike. Mike, I now command that you return to me all soul pieces and power that you have taken from me in this lifetime or any other with love and kindness. And I also recognize that there's this thing called karma, which is the law of cause and effect in place. And if there's such a thing as past lives, we need to take this into consideration when doing energy work. And so I also state, Mike, I now return any soul pieces and power I have taken from you in this lifetime or any other with love and kindness. I always say with love and kindness because love is always the highest intention. And any process we do, we should do with the intention of love, even if we're feeling anger or hatred in the moment. We don't want those kinds of feelings to linger and keep us connected to that person through negativity. Ultimately, we want to hold the space of love for our perceived enemies because it keeps our heart open to love for all beings. And we live life from the vibration of love, which is the highest vibration that we can achieve. Whenever we hold anger or hostility for that person, we remain stuck in that vibration and it affects all of our relationships. I'm not saying that we shouldn't feel our anger, but we need to find effective ways to work through our anger so we can get back to love. I talk about this in my episode on love, the last episode that I did. When we get stuck in anger, we simply become an angry, hostile person. So let me make this clear. There is a difference between feeling angry and being stuck in your anger. You know, it's normal when you feel violated to feel angry for a period of time, but that anger needs to be worked through. If you're feeling anger at the person you are commanding return your soul pieces and power, use that anger as a force behind your command. I command that you return all soul pieces and power you have taken from me with love and kindness. When you do this process, visualize all that energy you have given that person, leaving their energy field and coming back to you clean and rejuvenated. Cleaning those soul parts is an important part of the process because you don't want this energy returned with all the toxic residue that is collected on the journey. Just see it passing through a cleansing filter first and then coming back to you. You may even see that person visibly weakened as a result of your taking your power back. Where that person may have looked big and powerful to you, you might see them as small and weak energetically. When I do a hypnotherapy process with someone, I often have them see that person as really small, as fitting in the palm of their hand. And this takes away that feeling that this big energy person has power over them. When you see someone really small, you don't feel so powerless. When somebody's standing in the palm of your hand, you know you can just cup your hand around them and contain them, that they have no power over you. I've had the experience with people I felt disempowered by. When I saw them again, they seemed so much smaller to me. They seemed shorter and energetically diminished. My energy had actually grown so much bigger that they no longer felt so big to me. I had one woman visualize her dominant narcissistic boss as a really small person during a hypnotherapy session. And when she went back to work, she felt much more powerful and no longer felt afraid of his energy. Oftentimes, someone who has taken power from you will align with another person in order to join powerful forces against you. Have you seen that happen? This happens with gangs. This happens with the clique at school for teenagers, high school, junior high, even kids in grade school. Happens in cliques at work, social groups. It also happens with the new partner of an ex who's had their head filled with all kinds of stories about you. It happens when a narcissistic ex-partner leaves and immediately hooks up with someone else who aligns with your ex against you. You can feel that energetic discord, the feeling of two on one. And when this happens, do a soul retrieval on both or all of the people in that group and see them all in the palm of your hand, very small and powerless. See your own energy feel large and expansive. Continue to do this process and visualize those people as very small and powerless. And this helps you to take back your power from the situation and realize that the person who is taking energy from you needs another energy source in order to pull it off. You can come back stronger and stronger so that the other source brings no added power. We don't do this process to actually take something from another person that belongs to that person. We're just taking our power back. These energy vampires are energetically small in the first place, which is why they need to take energy from others. I'll often do a process where I command that all energy taken from all others be returned to them, which really diminishes the energy of the vampire who's been feeding upon other people's energy. So, for example, if you picture, you know, a sociopathic, narcissistic person who has left behind a string of victims that have been abused by this person, he's taken all of these people's energy, or she, all of these people's energy. And so I will often do a soul retrieval to actually send back the energy of all of the victims of that person, to take it back and return it to its rightful owner. It's actually quite a fun process. It's not that we wish the energy vampire ill will. It is that we're doing a redistribution of energy, giving back what was taken. It's kind of like going into the home of a thief and taking all the possessions he has stolen from others and giving it back to them. The thief will walk into an empty house because he has earned very little on his own accord. If he sits in an empty house, he will either have to go out and steal some more or find a more honest way of getting what he needs. We're actually giving him the opportunity to find a more honest way, although he may not choose that. We aren't wishing the theft ill will. We're simply holding him accountable or holding her accountable. And so soul retrieval is simply an energetic process of taking back your power. It's pretty simple, really. I have an audio download for those who wish to have some guidance in this. The psychic cord cutting audio on my website, narcissismfree.com, includes a soul retrieval. And if you haven't downloaded it already, you can get it now for $19.97, and it includes two audios. I've had people who have listened to these audios for 30 days straight, which I recommend, with great results. The hypnosis work targets the subconscious mind directly, and so all you have to do is relax and listen. And if you do this for 30 days, and see a difference in your energy and the connection you feel with that person. And the reason I say 30 days, because it actually takes 30 days to form a habit. So that means it also takes 30 days to break a habit or form a new habit. And oftentimes that habitual sending of energy, or that sending of your energy to that other person, becomes habitual. You've been trained to give that person your energy subconsciously. You're not even aware of it. So when that person is no longer physically in your life, you're still feeding that person your energy. So when we do this process for 30 days, we are retraining our subconscious to stop giving energy in that direction. So a lot of people might buy this and have, you know, maybe really good results the first time they listen to it. But to have great results, you need to make a commitment to listen to it every day for 30 days. And this is a really good bang for your $20. Listen for 30 days. And that subconsciously trains you to change the direction in which you are channeling your energy. Hypnosis can be really powerful this way. And I've placed a link right under the announcement on my blog for this particular show titled Soul Retrieval, Soul Recovery. So if you'd like to get it today, you can go to my blog at narcissismfree.com/blog and read the announcement for the show today. And just try it, 30 days. Listen. Have that experience. Meanwhile, I hope this show has given you food for thought and a greater understanding on how you can take back your energy and soul vitality. Your energy belongs to you. It is yours by divine birthright. Set your intention on taking back your soul and living your life from a place of ultimate empowerment. You are not here just to survive. You are here to thrive, to step fully into your life and express yourself in all your glory. Have a great day.